Well, good morning and welcome to our Wednesday morning Bible study. This is obviously the continuation of our morning Bible studies. And today we are looking at really one of the saddest passages in the entire Bible, one of the most really pathetic passages in all of the scripture. We're in 2 Samuel chapter 4, and we're going to read really all of the chapter. There are only 12 verses, so it shouldn't take too long. But go ahead and read 2 Samuel chapter 4, 2 Samuel chapter 4, and then after you've read it, go ahead and unpause the audio, because you'll have to pause the audio, because I talk a little bit too fast for you to be able to read the whole thing in the amount of time it takes me to, you know, keep going. So you have to unpause the audio, and then we'll go through the text. Okay, so. All right, so here we are in 2 Samuel chapter 4, and we'll go through our W's. It's always good to go through your W's. It's always a good idea. It's always helpful. Even when you're pretty confident you know where you are, it's just a good refresher. Okay, so who is in this story? Well, if we look through the text, we have Ish-bosheth. Abner is mentioned, even though Abner is dead. And then Saul is mentioned as a reference to Ish-bosheth, who he is. And then you have Baanah and Rechab. Now, those are new characters, Baanah and Rechab, sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, who was a Benjamite. Okay, so again, these are new characters. We don't know who they are yet, so we'll have to look into that. Jonathan is mentioned. Mephibosheth is mentioned, although they don't actually play an important role in this story. And then looking through, of course, David appears in this story, and some of David's men are mentioned. The story occurs in, so that's our who. Our where is, we have two places. We have Ish-bosheth, where Ish-bosheth is, and then we have David at Hebron. Okay, David is at Hebron. When is this happening? Well, this is happening after the death of Abner and before David is anointed king, which happens in chapter 5. So I know that sounds like really complicated, you know, timeline study, right? Like chapter 4 happens between chapter 3 and chapter 5. Okay, I get it. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that, but it's good to know in the general timeline of David's life when this is happening. Okay, so what's our what? Well, beginning in verse 1. So Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, heard that Abner had died in Hebron, and he was very disheartened, and all Israel was afraid. Now, why is everybody afraid? Well, because when Abner dies at the hand of David's commander-in-chief, even though people knew David didn't have anything to do with it, they didn't know what was going to happen. So there was supposed to be, and I believe I've laid this out pretty clearly that this is the case, but if we go back to chapters 2 and 3, I think we can see that Ish-bosheth was okay with a peaceful transfer of power to the house of David. And this was set up by, you know, Abner being responsible, and Ish-bosheth being responsible for handing over Michal, the daughter of Saul, who was David's wife, back to David. I think we can see that there was a general idea that there was going to be a peaceful transfer of power, that the house of Saul was really done with being kings, the house of David were going to be the kings, but it was going to be peaceful. There was going to be the end of bloodshed. But when they hear that Abner died, everybody is disheartened. They're like, okay, well, so is David going to just start exterminating people in the house of Saul because he doesn't want any future rival claimants to the throne? And so Israel is afraid. They're like, is David going to take vengeance upon us, upon people who sided with Saul? And now Saul's son had two men who were in charge of raiding units. One was Baanah and the other Rechab. They were sons of Rimmon the Beerothite, who was a Benjamite. Beeroth, now this is interesting, we have this little factoid here. Beeroth is regarded as belonging to Benjamin, for the Beerothites fled to Gittaim and have remained there as resident foreigners until the present time. Okay, so the city of Beeroth is regarded as belonging to Benjamin because the Beerothites fled to Gittaim and have remained there as resident foreigners until the present time. So that's a little interesting little factoid. If you're using the Net Bible, it gives you the note that until the present time is, you know, until this day. So anyways, is that really significant for us today? No. And that's one of the tricky things about the scripture is a lot of times we get little factoids like that we're not really sure if they're significant or not. And, you know, sometimes they are significant. Sometimes these little factoids are really important. Sometimes they're not. Okay, so I think that the fact that this is important, the reason this is important is because these people were considered to be Benjamites. What tribe was Saul from? What tribe was Ishbosheth from? They were from Benjamin. Okay, so you've got this person. They're not really by blood Benjamites, but they're considered Benjamites because they've lived there. Okay, so you know you've got this issue of you know the Berothites are considered belonging to Benjamin, but they're not really Benjamites. But you know, so you've got questionable loyalty, right? So this is what the storyteller is doing. He's laying out the case for there being questionable loyalty. Otherwise, that's a pointless factoid. Do we need to know whether the Berothites are blood relations to the Benjamites or not? We don't. Okay, we don't need to know that. But it's interesting and it's important because they give us this factoid because these guys are Benjamites who aren't really Benjamites. So was their loyalty to the house of Saul really loyalty to the house of Saul? Okay, now, verse 4. Saul's son Jonathan had a son who was crippled in both feet. And of course, we're going to talk about Mephibosheth later, but he was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan arrived from Jezreel. His nurse picked him up and fled, but in their haste to get away, he fell and was injured. Mephibosheth was his name. Now, this is just dropped in here, and this is not going to come into any significant importance to the narrative until later. But what it's doing is it's laying out the case that when these dramatic events happen, when important people in the kingdom die, everybody panics because nobody knows who is secure. As long as the king is alive, there's this general sense of security. There's this general idea that people are going to behave in certain ways because the power structure is intact. When the power structure is upended, nobody knows what anybody's going to do. Okay? Now, we read, "Now the sons of Rimmon," verse 5, "Now the sons of Rimmon the Berothite, Rechab and Baana, went at the hottest part of the day into the home of Ishbosheth as he was enjoying his midday rest. They entered the house under the pretense of getting wheat and mortally wounded him in the stomach. Then Rechab and his brother escaped." They had entered the house while Ishbosheth was resting in his bedroom. Okay, now again, we already know this. Why are we told again in verse 7 what we've already been told in verse 5? Why this repetition? Well, I think we'll see why. I'm not going to tell you right now, but maybe think about that in your head. Start thinking about why is this repeated? Okay. Well, why is this repeated? "Taking his head, they traveled all the way of the Arabah all that night. They brought the head of Ishbosheth to David in Hebron, saying, 'Look, the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy who sought your life. The Lord has granted vengeance to my lord the king this day against Saul and his descendants.'" Okay, so let's just pause here. All right. So verse 5 tells us, "The sons of Rimmon went at the hottest part of the day to the home of Ishbosheth as he was enjoying his midday rest." Now, who are these guys? These guys are heads of his raiding bands. These guys are part of his, you know, his light infantry, his skirmishers, you know, or his light cavalry, I guess, you know, whatever you want to call it. They're his irregular troops. These guys are known to Ishbosheth. That's the whole point. They are trusted members of his military. They're commanders in his military. These are supposed to be people that Ishbosheth can trust. They enter the house. Okay, well, they're allowed to enter the house. They're taking advantage of a gift given to them to be able to enter the home of the king, and they do it on the pretense of going to get wheat. And it says they mortally wounded him in the stomach. Then Rechab and his brother escaped. Okay, so we don't actually have the full story in verse 6. Verse 6 gives us a summary of the events, and then it gives us a more detailed account in verse 7. And we're going to get to why in just a second, okay? So they had entered the house while Ishbosheth was resting on his bed in his bedroom. Okay, so it tells us, you know, he was in the house, he was enjoying his midday rest, and they stabbed him in the gut. Okay, that's bad. That sounds really bad. But then it says, we get even more details. They had entered the house while Ishbosheth was resting on his bed in his bedroom. They mortally wounded him and then cut off his head. Taking his head, they traveled all the way of the Arabah that night. They brought the head of Ishbosheth to David in Hebron, saying to the king, "Look, the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy who sought your life, the Lord has granted vengeance to my lord the king this day against Saul and his descendants." So in verses 4 and 5, particularly verses 6, it gives us this order of events. Then in verses 7, well, really just verse 7, gives us a kind of an expanded version of verses 4 and 5, where it gives us a little bit more details that not only was he in the house enjoying a midday rest, like he wasn't just, you know, relaxing in the house in the heat of the day, you know, sitting in the shade and doing that stuff. He was in his bedroom on his bed. He's taking a nap. He's taking a siesta. And these guys come in, and then instead of just like striking him, they stabbed him in the stomach. So did they stab him in the stomach because he put up a fight, or did they stab him in the stomach because they're just jerks, right? Like instead of dealing a death blow right away, they stab him in the stomach. Now, if they were good assassins, they would have, you know, they would have killed him in a more efficient manner. So maybe they got found out. Maybe that's why they stabbed him in the stomach. They just stabbed him in the fastest place they could reach to put a mortal blow on him. But they took the time to cut his head off. Because obviously, what did they want? They wanted David's approval. They wanted some kind of reward from David. So I don't think they got found out. I think that they're just really crummy assassins. Okay, so they go, and we'll find out that they're not the smartest guys either. So they take the head to David, and they say, you know, this is the head of the son of Saul who sought your life. Now, if they knew anything about the politics, they would know that David was making peace with Ish-bosheth. The peace was being had. And if they knew anything about David, they would know that twice David spared Saul's life when he had the opportunity to kill him. So what we see here is kind of this inverse, right? I think the reason we get the repetition. Not hear me out here. The reason we get the repetition of them killing Ish-bosheth when he was sleeping is why? Why? Twice we're told that Ish-bosheth was completely harmless, completely unsuspecting, I should say, and that they killed him in that manner. Why twice? Why do we have this recap? Well, I think that, one, it could just be the storyteller's way of telling the story, and where he tells it one way, and then he tells it, you know, he expands on it, because this was a narrative. You know, this was written to be read out loud, and so people hear the story, and they hear, oh gosh, they killed him, and then they escaped, and then they hear the even more gruesome details, and it hammers it in. I think that's part of it, but I think the bigger part of it is, it reminds us that two times David spared Saul's life. We get the story of Ish-bosheth being murdered by his the heads of his raiding bands. We get that story twice. Well, twice David spared Saul's life. One time David did it when where? When Saul was where? When Saul was laying in his bed. Okay? The second time David spared Saul's life, Saul was laying in his bed. And the second time this story, the recapitulation of this story, where we find out that Ish-bosheth is resting on his bed. I think that what we're supposed to see, I think this is a deliberate connection. There's a deliberate connection back to when David spared Saul's life. This is supposed to remind us of this. We're supposed to hear this story. And remember, this story was meant to be read out loud. And we're supposed to think in our heads, we're like, wait a minute. Somebody was laying in his bed and somebody stabbed him in the stomach. Wait, that reminds me, David. Abishai wanted to do that. And David said, no, you're not allowed to do that. And we're supposed to remember that David did not want to hurt Saul. We're supposed to remember that. We're supposed to make that recollection. We're supposed to understand who David is and who these men are. So David replied to Rechab and his brother Baana, the sons of Rimmon the Beerothite, "As surely as the Lord lives, who has delivered my life from all adversity, when someone told me that Saul was dead, even though he thought he was bringing good news, I seized him and killed him at Ziklag." He's like, listen, fellas, if you think you know me, you would know that the guy who claimed, this foreigner who claimed to have killed Saul with a mercy killing, I killed him because he struck the Lord's anointed. He said, I seized him and killed him at Ziklag. That was the good news I gave to him. Surely, when wicked men have killed an innocent man as he slept in his own house, should I not now require the blood from your hands and remove you from the earth? So David issued orders to the soldiers and they put them to death. Then they cut off their hands and feet and hung them near the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ish-bosheth and buried it in the tomb of Abner in Hebron. Okay, so here's what David says. David says, look, don't you remember when Saul and Jonathan died and the guy came in and said, yeah, I killed Saul, mercy killing, you know, I killed him. And hey, this is good news for you, David, because now you're the king. And what did David do? David says, what did I do to that guy? Yeah, I killed him. He thought he was bringing me good news. And guess what? This is the reward he got for his good news. This is the good news I gave him. He said, now how much more should I require the blood of you wicked men who kill an innocent man as he sleeps in his own house? Should I not require his blood from your hands and remove you from the earth? And this is what David says. And David is absolutely right, by the way. David is absolutely right. Not only was the house of David making peace with the house of Ishbosheth, but what they did was underhanded and wicked and cruel, and it was beyond the pale. It was treachery. Why would you trust a traitor? I mean, that's the thing. Beyond anything else, you have to ask yourself, if you're coming to a king with the head of another king and proposing your loyalty to that king, why would that king trust you? Like, it is not in the best interests of kings to reward people who kill kings. I mean, this is not how that works. That's not how any of that works, right? Like, if you're going to kill kings, like, don't expect other monarchs to support you. That was the whole thing in the Revolutionary War. You know, like, a lot of the French were telling a lot of French generals and thinkers were like, yeah, you know, supporting the Americans in a revolution against a monarchy is probably not a good look for monarchies. You know, monarchies probably need to stick together. And that later happened, by the way, after the French Revolution, you know, under Metternich, I think it was Metternich, that there was this league that tried to put down the French Revolution because, you know, they thought that it was bad policy to allow people to cut kings' heads off. You know, they're just like, kings are like, nah, let's not make this a habit, right? So anyways, why do we have this story? Well, again, we compare the attitudes of David to the attitudes of others, and we can see that David is superior in all ways. David is morally superior, and we see, again, why David is made king. Anyways, thank you, and I hope you'll join us tomorrow, in Thursday, as we enter in to chapter 5 of 2 Samuel. Tomorrow we'll be in 2 Samuel, chapter 5. Thank you. God bless. Bye.